Funding for Here and Now Anytime comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
Delighted to have you with us for Here and Now Anytime, where we give you the news you need to know today and the stories you may still be thinking about tomorrow. So come along and subscribe. We've got a lot ahead. Let's get started.
This is an exceptionally violent group. And remember, we're using the standards of the modern jihadist movement. So that's a pretty violent baseline.
We learn more about the group that claimed responsibility for the deadly Moscow concert hall attack. It's Thursday, March 28th, from NPR and WBUR Boston. Welcome to Here and Now Anytime. I'm Shirley Jahan. Coming up on today's episode, a rabbi, a priest, and an imam. No, there's no joke here. They're going to talk with us during this holy season of Ramadan, Easter, and Passover upcoming. And they'll reflect on one important question. What are their faithful struggling with most right now? And then we celebrate with cooking, using one ingredient that most of us have in the fridge or the pantry. It's the awesome onion. Chef Kathy Guntz joins us with recipes and tips featuring the leek, the scallion, the green, red, and yellow onion. We give you the recipes and the answers to the age-old question, how to chop onions without crying. First now, who is ISIS-K, the group linked to the Moscow concert hall attack? Why did it target the hall, and why now? Georgetown University professor and international security expert Daniel Byman talks with Scott Tong about the terror group, its history, and where it may be headed.
Many analysts call this group a hyper-violent strain of ISIS known for its brutality. How violent is this group?
So this is an exceptionally violent group. And remember, we're talking using the standards of the modern jihadist movement. So that's a pretty violent baseline to begin with. And this is a group that is known for seeking out and killing large numbers of civilians, which is, of course, what we saw in Moscow.
Yeah. And what previous attacks has this group been linked to?
So most of its attacks have been in the Afghanistan and Pakistan area, where they've often gone after worshipers from other sects within Islam that they consider heretical, or sites linked to the Taliban government in Afghanistan. But probably the biggest recent attack outside the area was at the beginning of the year when they targeted funeral processions in Iran. Mm-hmm. And this was an attack entirely on civilians, killed around 100. And from ISIS-K's point of view, was going after one of their big enemies, Iran.
Yeah. ISIS-K, of course, has claimed credit for this attack in Moscow. If indeed that's true, why attack a theater in Moscow and why now?
So Russia has been near the top of the enemies list for the modern jihadist movement. You can go back to the 1980s and the anti-Soviet struggle in Afghanistan. But ISIS-K's parent organization, the Islamic State, particularly hates Russia because Russia backed the Syrian government and worked with Iran against ISIS in Syria during the last 10 years. And then ISIS-K itself uses the Taliban, its enemies' ties to Russia, as a way of trying to discredit the Taliban. So by attacking Russia, ISIS-K can say, we're the ones fighting while the Taliban is trying to make nice with our historic enemy. So there are a lot of different reasons.
Yeah, yeah. And right, taking on the Taliban, what do we know about its ideology?
So ISIS-K embraces an extreme version of Islam that really considers even groups like the Taliban that by any normal stretch of the imagination should be considered extreme, believes that they're not doing enough, that they're not imposing Islamic law as aggressively as they should be, that they're at times negotiating or working with the enemies of Islam. So it has an uncompromising absolutist view of how the world should work.
And organizationally, what do we know about where it gets its funding, where it does its recruiting?
So ISIS-K historically got a lot of money from the parent organization, the Islamic State. A lot of that's dried up, in part due to a very successful U.S.-led counterterrorism campaign. So the group has less money than it used to have. It often draws on local sources, at times extorting, but funding has been a big concern of this group in recent years.
Hmm. And when you monitor ISIS-K, its public rhetoric, its social media, do you think it likely plans attacks on targets in Western Europe, in North America?
So ISIS-K until recently was very focused on Afghanistan and Pakistan, but we're seeing it spread. And so we saw the Iran attack at the beginning of the year, but the Moscow attack is in particular a big jump that's outside its historic area. The U.S. assessment is that ISIS-K for now does not threaten the U.S. homeland, but that it's going from a group that's locally focused to one that's really trying to attack much farther outside its base of operations.
Yeah. And finally, do you sense ISIS-K will face repercussions, counterattacks from the Russian military or groups aligned with Russia, given its claim to be behind the attack on Moscow?
So Russia's going to want to do something high profile and symbolic to show ordinary Russians that the government is fighting back and protecting them. But ISIS-K is a very hard target. The U.S. went after it for many years with only limited success. And the Taliban, for all its many problems, has been aggressively trying to stop ISIS-K. So Russia may try to do something, a raid or some sort of operation, but the effect is likely to be limited. The big change Russia may do is increase security measures in Russia itself, and that's probably going to target Russia's Muslim minority, which may actually create further problems.
Yeah. Great. Anything else, Professor, you want to add on ISIS-K before we let you go?
So the one thing I'd add, just U.S. intelligence seems to have done an impressive job of monitoring this group. There were warnings that were very public in advance of the attack. There seems to be specific information passed to Russian intelligence services and before that, Iranian intelligence services. So this is a group that clearly is dangerous, but it's also heartening to know that U.S. intelligence and other services have some ability to monitor its activities.
Yeah. Daniel Byman is professor of security studies at Georgetown and also senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Professor, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Up next, Easter is this weekend. Passover is coming up. Ramadan is underway now. We are in a holy season and in some unholy, hard times. We're asking clergy members to reflect on the biggest concerns their faithful say they're grappling with right now. That's next. Stay with us.
Over the past couple decades, the U.S. has lost about a third of its newspapers, taking thousands of local journalists off their beat. A functioning democracy and functioning local journalism go hand in hand. We're trying to do our part, and that's why we need you to do your part. Make sure that the NPR network stays strong by supporting us at donate.npr.org. And thank you.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Carvana. With thousands of options under $20,000, plus customizable financing terms and down payments as low as $0 down, it's easy to find a car that fits your lifestyle. Visit Carvana.com or download the app today. Terms and conditions may apply.
There are a lot of issues on voters' minds right now. Six big ones could help decide the election. Guns, reproductive rights, immigration, the economy, healthcare, and the wars overseas. On the Consider This podcast from NPR, we will unpack the debates on these issues and what's at stake. You can listen to NPR's Consider This wherever you get your podcasts.
Muslims are fasting during Ramadan. Christians celebrate Easter this Sunday. And next month during Passover, Jews commemorate the exodus from slavery. For many, it is an important time to be faithful, but it's also a challenging one for searching and for reflection. So today we're asking three friends of Here and Now who lead their faithful to reflect one by one. First, Hussein Rashid is a traveling Shia preacher. He teaches at Harvard and in the faith is considered an elder or teacher. Hussein, welcome back to Here and Now.
Thank you for having me, Scott.
Now, we first spoke in the days, the weeks after the October 7th attack. But if I can kind of put this broader question to you, what is the most difficult question that your faithful are struggling with right now?
You know, as we are in the month of Ramadan, there's so many questions that we are going through. And I don't know if there's one I could say this is the consensus that is on people's minds.
Mm-hmm.
I think at a micro level or at a local level, people are dealing with real mental health issues. And that means they're seeking treatment, thankfully. And they're on medication and they can't fast. And they want to know what it means to take care of themselves while trying to observe this fast during Ramadan. But at a global scale, they're asking, where is God in what is happening in the world today? How can we fast when people in Gaza are hungry? How can we not fast when the people of Gaza are hungry? Mm. How do we look at what's happening in Ukraine? How do we look at what's happening in Somalia? How do we look at what's happening in Sudan? How do we look at what's happening in for the Uyghurs, for the Rohingya, and not feel this crushing weight of obligation to help people right now?
Mm. Wow. And my goodness, where is God? When this question is put to you, how do you respond?
I think it really depends on who's asking. I am a firm mm-hmm. believer, because this is for us in the Quran, that wheresoever you turn is the face of God. And for me, when we are not seeing God in a place, we have to ask ourselves why. It's not that God has abandoned us. I don't believe God ever abandons us. But if we're not seeing God, what are we doing as the agents on earth that masks God's presence from us, that makes God unavailable to us in God's majesty, in God's beauty, in God's wholeness, in God's goodness? What are we doing? What are we responsible for in masking that presence? And what can we be responsible for to making that presence revealed again? And I turn it into a question of obligation for us. Because again, in the Quran, God tells us that God will not change our condition unless we are willing to change it ourselves.
How's this moment for you personally?
Scott, I'm tired. Huh. I'm tired. This has been a long time and we are carrying a lot of weight. We're carrying a lot of weight to support our people. We're carrying a lot of weight because of the tragedy that we see in the world now. There is, I think, by virtue of us being Muslim, that we are presumed anti-Semitic, even though it is the antithesis of what we are called to do and be in the world. I am tired of having to carry other people's weight. And at the same time, I remain and will always remain hopeful, because there is always a challenge in front of us to make the world better. And that to me is hopeful, because it is not an individual task. And it tells us that we too can do something greater together than we can alone.
Hussein Rashid is a traveling Shia preacher and he teaches at Harvard. Hussein, always good to have you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We turn now to Henry Brinton, senior pastor at the Fairfax Presbyterian Church in Fairfax, Virginia. Pastor, welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you so much, Scott.
Can I ask you, what's the most difficult question your members are asking right now?
The most difficult question my people are struggling with is how to rebuild community after the pandemic. We're all creatures of habit, and I'm afraid we got out of the habit of worship and small group participation. The process of coming back together is made much more difficult by the toxic political environment all around us. I know for myself that I learn the most from people who see things a bit differently than I do. And so church is a place where that can happen.
This is a time when, of course, we also have a war in the Middle East. And I'm curious how you've experienced this. Has there been a conversation with one of your parishioners about the wars we're seeing in the world, or about the divisive politics that has kind of struck you in a new way or had you ask yourself a new question?
Well, after the attacks in Israel on October the 7th, we had a lot of conversation in the church about that. And we're trying to, you know, to wrap our arms around both that attack on the people of Israel and then the Israeli military response. And we quickly realized that we needed to reach out to our community to understand that better. And so we invited the rabbi of our neighboring synagogue to come in and talk. At the same time, we've reached out to the Muslim community around us and have had conversations with members of a Turkish mosque nearby. And so we feel very strongly that our church needs to be a place where we convene people to learn from each other and understand the struggles that people are going through today.
And just, I guess, going into this weekend, when you think about community, you've mentioned that word several times. How might you pray for community in front of your people?
We pray for God to come into our lives and come into our community through the power of God's Holy Spirit to bind us together, to open our hearts and minds to each other, to help us to respond to each other's needs with generosity. I think that that is a virtue that is sorely lacking in our world today. We're not very generous with each other. We tend not to give each other the benefit of the doubt. And then beyond that generosity of spirit, to be generous with our resources as we attempt to serve a world in need.
Henry Brinton is senior pastor at the Fairfax Presbyterian Church in Fairfax, Virginia. Pastor Brinton, thank you so much.
You are so welcome, Scott.
Now let's turn to Rabbi Josh Franklin. He heads the Jewish Center of the Hamptons on Long Island, New York. We first spoke to him 2 years ago after Russia invaded Ukraine. Rabbi, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me back, Scott. I really appreciate it.
What is the most difficult question your faithful are struggling with right now?
This year, I think the question is a question that we've never really encountered, at least in my generation, and that is Passover being the time of the year, the holiday that celebrates the Exodus from Egypt. My question, and the question that I've kind of been asked in one form or another, is how do we get out of our very own Egypt, or Mitzrayim in Hebrew? Mitzrayim means narrow straits or place of confinement. And I'll say that each year kind of there's a global oppression or something that's going on in the world that we turn to, that we incorporate into our Passover Seder. Back in April 22, I was back on the show and I was talking about Ukrainian refugees. At the time, I was actually in Poland helping out Ukrainian refugees who were coming up across the border. Years earlier, it was Syrian refugees. And I even have this memory when I was younger. It was the Russians or the Russian Jews fleeing the Soviet Union. This year, it's not just Israelis who are at the center of our consciousness. It's American Jews too. We feel ourselves at the center of our own narrative. And that's what's different this year in a way that in my generation, we've never felt that.
Yeah. Now we're a little bit ahead of the Passover season in the calendar, but have you had conversations with your members on this question where you've asked people, when you think about your Egypt, what is it?
I love that question. Conversation after conversation, the root of where the angst comes from or the root where the answer might come from is October 7th and the terrorist attack in Israel. But I think the angst is more than just what's going on overseas, because we've seen a 337% increase, according to the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, in anti-Semitic incidents right here in the United States. Mm. And we feel that. I was in Montauk in November cleaning up swastikas that were painted on a Jewish storefront in our community. Never in my life did I ever imagine that as a rabbi, I'd be doing that work. And it was soul crushing, but that's Egypt, that experience right there. And I'm not alone. On college campuses across America, people don't feel safe walking to classes as Jews, not because of their political beliefs, but simply because they are Jews. And that's Egypt. That's what it feels like. And that is really what makes this year different and new, or at least different in a way that I've never seen in my lifetime.
That is Rabbi Josh Franklin. He heads the Jewish Center of the Hamptons on Long Island in New York. Rabbi Franklin, thank you again for the time, and we send our best to you and your flock.
Thank you so much, Scott, for having me again.
Coming up, we've got tips, new and old, on cooking with onions, along with three yummy recipes. Go on and get your goggles out. No, really. Deepa Fernandez and Robin Young mix it up with Chef Kathy Gunst next.
Okay, close your eyes for a second. Now imagine you're on your dream vacation. No work calls to answer, no text messages to respond to, just your suitcase and an opportunity.
The opportunity to just take yourself out of your routine and travel deeper.
How to actually take that dream trip. That's on the Life Kit podcast from NPR.
Across America, history is often recorded on small markers. You've probably seen them on the sides of roads, in front of buildings, in the middle of nowhere. NPR's Laura Sullivan spent a year investigating thousands of markers and found a distorted version of America's history, but also curiosities, humor, and joy. Listen to the new episode of The Sunday Story on the Up First podcast from NPR.
Taylor Swift has dropped a new album. She is the biggest pop star in the world, and everything she does makes news.
I gasped. I was like, oh my God, I've been there, and you can identify with it.
For a breakdown of Taylor Swift and her new album, The Tortured Poets Department, listen to the Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast from NPR.
The NPR app cuts through the noise, bringing you local, national, and global coverage. No paywalls, no profits, no nonsense. Download it in your app store today.
Resident chef Kathy Gunst has been thinking about onions as well as leeks and shallots and chives, and she's got some new recipes. Hi, Kathy. Happy spring.
Hello. Don't forget chives, the very first sign of spring in so many gardens. Yeah. Little, beautiful, bright green popping up.
And it smells so beautiful. Well, first of all, tick through some of the most common members of the onion family.
Well, I mentioned chives. They are, the onion family are alliums. Leeks are like large scallions, sweet, tender. Red onions have that gorgeous red purple and a spicy, assertive flavor. Very good for pickling. There's scallions, shallots, white onions, yellow onions, you name it. Way more than you would even guess.
Well, let's look at your recipes, Kathy. Start with red onion, rosemary, parmesan, pistachio pizza.
Yeah. Sounds like an unusual combination, but it is so good. I got inspired at Pizzeria Bianco in Los Angeles, where chef Chris Bianco, who makes brilliant pizza, he put red onions. They were almost creamy and crunchy, salted pistachios on top, and then I sprinkled cheese on, and then this is a genius tip. I add a touch of cold water so that when the cheese melts that's on the pizza dough, it almost becomes like a cream sauce.
Ooh.
It's very, very great tip, very simple, but this is a wonderful combination. And the red onions really come through with their assertive, but also sweet flavor, and rosemary, parm, and pistachio. And you can use store-bought pizza dough, no problem.
Yay. Yay. A quick question. How do you cut onions without crying? There's all sorts of techniques. What do you do?
I do cry. I cry quite a bit. I actually am one of those people that look so ridiculous that wears goggles. There are goggles made just for onions. I'm not kidding. I mean, some people say run cold water.
I do
wash
that.
Wash your hands quite a bit. I do all of it, and I still cry. When my kids were little, they would walk in and say, "What's wrong, Mommy?" And I'd be like, "Onions."
Well, so goggles. Okay. We'll look for those.
And, yeah, and while we've got the goggles on, Kathy, leeks for a vinaigrette. I don't find leeks make me cry as much, but I love the fact that you put them in a vinaigrette.
Yeah, they don't make you cry as much. They're very elegant. They're a very subtle onion flavor. And leeks vinaigrette is a classic French dish. I steam them in salted water, dry them, and then I make a kind of marinade, a dressing with parsley, chives, and capers. Beautiful bright green flavors, springtime, with a loaf of warm crusty bread. Wait till you see the photo. It's very beautiful. It's a piece of art.
Well, you know, as we're mentioning leeks, can you just interchange? I know I've been, you know, in a supermarket aisle trying to Google, can I use leeks instead of shallots? You know, can you just interchange?
In most cases, yes. I think leeks are fairly unique. You could do this with scallions, particularly the fatter, thicker ones. But in general, yellow onions and white onions and red onions are interchangeable. But a leek is kind of its own beautiful, elegant allium.
Okay.
We will respect the leek. But
thank
Kathy,
you.
I want to know about your six onion braised chicken with chives. What are the six onions?
I use, you ready? Mm-hmm. Leeks, scallions, shallots, yellow onion, garlic, and fresh spring chives. And this is quite simple. You brown chicken thighs, and then you saute all these beautiful onions, pour them on top of the lightly browned chicken, put some white wine in and fresh chives, pop it in the oven, and magic happens. The onions get very soft and sweet, and they just create this beautiful flavor base for simple chicken. This is a great, you know, Tuesday night dinner.
You know, and it's reminding me, I do love onions. And this time of year, I do love onion soups. And it's just so easy to just take onions that are about to go. I mean, just give us a quick primer on that.
Well, I mean, when they're about to go is pretty vague. If they're sprouting new scallion tops, and if they're soft and mushy and they stink, no, they've gone too far. When you're shopping for onions, they should feel heavy, no bruises, no super strong onion scent, but they should be firm and tight, and always keep them in a cool, dark spot. But scallions and chives are the exception. They generally are happier in a refrigerator.
Okay, but you can, like, just make a soup. Or, you know, all this stuff. There's so many things to do with it. Yeah.
When they're soft and they haven't fully gone to rot, they are wonderful to use and to throw into stocks.
Sure. Okay.
And as always, we will have all Kathy's recipes at hereandnow.org. Kathy, I am starving. Thank you, as always.
Nice to talk to you.
Again, we've got lots of recipes, pictures, and a handy list of all the different types of onions worth knowing. Check it all out at our website, hereandnow.org. Just scroll on down to the recipes section. Our podcast comes to you thanks to the team behind Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston. Today's stories are produced by Kalyani Saxena, Lynn Menigan, and Emiko Tamagawa. Our editors are Todd Munt, Micaela Rodriguez, Mike Scotto, and Kat Welch. Technical directors are Mike Moschetto, Caleb Green, and Michaela Varela. Mike Moschetto, Max Liebman, and Chris Bentley created our theme music. Our digital producers are Allison Hagen and Grace Griffin. The executive producer of Here and Now is Carlene Watson. I'm Shirley Jihad, and thanks for being with us. Go ahead and subscribe, and we'll see you tomorrow.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Framebridge. It's fun to save memories like tickets, souvenirs, or even original artwork. Framebridge offers custom framing for just about anything. It's easy. Order online or go into one of their retail locations for expert help. Offering a curated selection of frame styles along with fast service and free shipping. See why Framebridge has been trusted to frame over 2 million pieces. Visit Framebridge.com or a local Framebridge store and custom frame just about anything. Framebridge.com. This message comes from NPR sponsor Rosetta Stone, an expert in language learning for 30 years. Right now, NPR listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership to 25 different languages for 50% off. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
Listen to Embedded for moments that stay with you.
I could smell the smoke. I could smell the dust.
Voices that resonate. Stories that change the way you think about your life.
How did we get here?
The Embedded podcast is NPR's home for original documentary series. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.